Bonjour, this is Jennifer Sage with the Indoor Cycling Association. This is stage three of the 2014 Tour de France from Cambridge to London, and I've got Robert Baldy, or should I call you Sir Robert Baldy, from England, who is going to describe for you this stage. How are you, Robert?
I'm good, thanks. Greetings from London.
Well, I'm so glad that you decided to do this stage for several reasons. Obviously, the tour is back in the UK. Tell us. You told me a little bit in the past about, you know, why it's there and why the Tour de France organization was so excited to bring it back to London.
Yes, it's when the tour came in 2007. I don't think anybody expected the reaction, given that cycling wasn't really a big thing in England. Mainly due to Chris Boardman in 1992 winning the Olympics in Barcelona, and that kind of ultimately started the track cycling in the UK, and we had Chris Hoy, Vickie Pendleton. But in terms of road cycling, there wasn't much there. Bradley Wiggins, or Sir Bradley Wiggins now, he was one of the track stars at the Olympics, and he's the one that made the jump onto road cycling. And in 2007, he was one of the favorites to win the prologue time trial in London. He was just beaten by the great Fabian Cancellara.
So that was kind of like the beginning of the big cycling craze in the UK, and it's just been exploding over there.
Yep. I mean, now we've got Bradley Wiggins, Chris Froome, Mark Cavendish, Geraint Thomas. We've got riders coming out of everywhere now.
So the tour came back to the UK this time, back in 2007, they had two stages there?
Yes, we had the prologue in London and then London into the countryside, I think it was Canterbury, and then they hopped over to France. And it was kind of an experiment because the last couple of times it came to England, there were quite boring stages, nobody turned out to watch, there was no real excitement about it whatsoever. But this time, the reception in 2007 was so big. In the prologue, at certain sort of the optimal viewing points, the crowds were seven deep to watch just the prologue. So because of the reception that it had, Christian Prudhomme, who's the organizer of ASO, who's organizes the Tour de France, he promised immediately that the Tour de France would be back to London sometime soon. And 7 years later, it's back again.
Three stages.
Yep, it's this time, technically it's supposed to be Yorkshire. They've got the first two stages are in Yorkshire, and the second one being quite a hilly one as well. Yorkshire's quite very short, very sharp climbs. But the third stage, which is the one that interested me the most, is Cambridge to London, which is a very rolling hill profile.
Now, one of the reasons I'm excited to have a stage like this in our Tour de France package is that you've put this stage together as primarily an endurance ride, you know, just moderate to moderately hard, and I'll let you describe the intensity in just a moment. But I just know that so many instructors around the world have challenges with teaching this intensity of a ride and keeping their riders engaged. And you, I've known you for years, and I know that you not only love endurance, but your students love it. And you have taught them the importance of this intensity and the importance of learning how to monitor yourself. And so that's why I think it's so great that you are doing this profile. And you are hopefully going to teach our instructors who will be doing this stage how to teach a Tour de France stage as an endurance ride. All that being said, you're still going to have a sprint at the finish, so they'll still get their high intensity if they want it.
Yes, it's one of those stages that if anyone watches the Tour de France, they call them flat, they might call them boring. It was almost as like nothing happens until the very final sprint. If it were that easy, I'd be in the Tour de France right now. So if any instructor is thinking that, then that means that their riders are going to be thinking as well, it's boring, it's flat, there's nothing to do. That's why it's very important that the instructor understands what endurance is actually about. The term endurance itself should give you a description of how hard it can be, because you have to endure. Endurance is effectively getting from point A to point B in one constant effort. Now, that could be, as I've described it, a zone two effort, which is quite hard work, but you're comfortable. You're not out of breath. Your legs are not going to kill you. And my cueing would be to just say, okay, whatever you can go for 40 minutes, that's the pace that you want to set. If you want to do it at zone three, you can make it so that the peloton is having a really strong day. They want to just try and drive the pace as high as possible. You could take them up a bit higher, take them up to three if they want. Call it high-end endurance if you want. Effectively, this profile, it's aerobic intervals. So now and again, the effort level is going to rise, but more or less, you want them to be able to keep going without a break from start to finish.
So you've chosen songs from artists who are either British or got their start there, correct?
They actually are all British bands. Some will have some members that are also Australian. But essentially, yeah, it's I, there are bands which obviously in the US are going to be more famous for being British, like The Clash and The Rolling Stones and The Beatles and The Who. But I wanted to go for tracks that are more familiar to spinning instructors and artists that are quite famous in their own right, but people may not realize they are actually British. For example, people like Chicane and Above and Beyond, they're very, very popular with spinning instructors, but they are very much British bands.
All right, so we start in Cambridge. How do you introduce this to your riders?
Well, the first track I use is I love this track as a warm-up
I
because
love it too. It's a great song. Spirit Dance by Dead Can Dance.
the first 3 minutes are very atmospheric, very quiet. It allows you time to actually just talk gently to the riders, and I use this almost like, especially with Tour de France profiles, to replicate what happens in the Tour, where it's starting in Cambridge, which is a very big cycling city. It's an old city. It's not very suitable for 210 riders or whatever it is, 198 sometimes. 198 riders just going through there and already starting to race. There's going to be a lot of pushing, a lot of elbowing, people are going to fall over, and it's not very good for the Tour to have that. So inevitably what they do is they have what's called the fictional departure. So they'll have all the fanfare, they watch all the riders go off, but it's more of a procession, so it's almost like an exhibition. And they'll have at the front, they'll have the yellow jersey, the green jersey, the polka dot jersey, white jersey leading off the ride. And then outside of the town, where the roads are a bit wider, they're more suitable, more sort of car-driven, really, roads, they will then have a motorbike that's going along, and then just they start the flag, that's it, official racing begins. And this track's really good for that because the first 3 minutes really quiet. And then at the fourth, sort of for the next 4 minutes, the beat starts to kick in, and it's a very rolling, very not quite forceful, but it makes you work. It's not an easy flat road.
Now, what do you tell your riders as you are getting ready for that increase in intensity, and you want them to maintain it for the next 40 minutes?
Well, what I would say is, use the first 4 minutes of the warm-up track to build up to whatever you feel you can handle for that 40 or 45 minutes, whatever you can sustain consistently throughout. That's kind of, if you want to call it the boring bit, that's the baseline. That's the minimum effort that's going to be required to stay in the peloton all the way through. On top of that, there are going to be challenges along the way, but there are no breaks, and that's the very key thing. So no matter what they do along the way, the idea is not to stop. If it weren't for the Tour de France, and another way of encouraging people to do endurance, is that it can take up to 20 minutes for your metabolism to really kick in.
Oh
So
yeah,
you need to
I'm
go
one of
from.
those people. It takes me forever to warm up, so.
Yeah, the older, the fitter you are, the longer it takes. And my excuse is I'm fitter, so therefore it takes me 20 minutes. But that's hence the advice of 30 minutes of brisk exercise every day, because you need that consistent effort. So with this one, it's just a case of, well, we want to get from A to B, so don't work so hard that you have to stop along the way, because the peloton is not going to be stopping. It's a very short stage. They're going to be going very quickly, probably going at around about 25 to 30 miles an hour most of the way, and that's their baseline.
Now you have designed this ride to have short little surges, if you will. That's your aerobic intervals. How do you describe those, or how do you ask your students to increase their intensity? Is it terrain-based, cadence-based, resistance-based?
A mixture of all of them. It depends on what the instructor is used to with their riders. With mine, obviously, they are in the UK. They know what the roads are like. The fact that we don't have much flat road around here, it's all rolling hills. What I would say is that you've got your baseline. Let's say the peloton is going at 25 miles an hour. If you're going at 25 miles an hour along a flat piece of road, they will find it easy. But now and again, they will need to work a little harder in order to get over any way. But they won't slow down. What they'll do is they'll actually work harder in order to maintain that 25 miles an hour over the hill as well. So that's when the effort level is going to get higher. So when we come to a hill in the road, there are two ways of putting in that extra power. Riders can either simulate it by staying in the same gear and picking up the leg speed, increasing the cadence, or they can keep the same cadence and just increase the resistance, which is more what would be like in real terms. You'll stay in the same gear and you have to push harder in order to get over that hill. So it's much the same as going through a headwind. If you want to get through that headwind, you want to keep the same cadence, the resistance is going to be that little bit higher.
Yeah, and you just feel it. You feel it in your legs, you feel it in your heart, but nothing else has changed. Well, obviously your legs, but
And because it's especially if you're increasing the resistance, if you want to take the riders out of the saddle, that's a good time to do it as well. But then the important thing, once you're over that hill, down the other side, you can't use your weight to coast along downhill because the descent isn't really steep enough to do that. You have to work just as you were working before the hill.
So when you say aerobic intervals, the recovery is not the same kind of recovery we might imagine for a high intensity class. This is you're just dropping back a little bit. So that's why this is that constant level of work for that whole 40, 45 minutes.
Yeah, it can actually take more out of you than interval training, because you might not be going maximum all out. You don't hit the highs, but you don't hit the lows either. So you're kind of almost straddling that line of the comfort zone. And the important part is one thing that will happen is that after the hill, I see it every time when I've gone riding, where people get over the hill, and then they ease back, they drop back their effort. But that slows them down so much that the rest of the group completely overtakes them and leaves them behind. So it's very important to actually say, one of the cues I give, for example, is it was okay before the hill, it'll be okay again. You just got to keep working until the heart rate settles back down again.
Great, great. So what are some other like racing cues that you can use? Now this stage is not focusing on attacks and breakaways, which is great. All the other ones tend to do that. So while they're in the peloton, what might a rider be thinking of? What's some strategy that might be going through the team's heads?
Well, if you're a sprinter, obviously you want to get to the line. You're going to have your teammates around you, but you're going to have to keep your position in the group. And it's the same if you're a GC rider. You want to stay towards the front of the group so there are no crashes. Now, in order to do that, unfortunately, life at the front is quite hard.
Yes.
Like at the back, where you can kind of like just coast along almost the whole way because of the aerodynamics of drafting. It's when it comes to that hill, you want to keep your position in the group, you're going to have to work a little bit harder. And that actually could leave you a bit of an option. If, for whatever reason, somebody doesn't want to make that extra effort, you could just say, okay, no problem, you're dropping back in the group a little bit, miss one of the efforts out, that's no problem, you can just move up through the group later. So there's always that option to actually miss out on these extra efforts along the way. Now, I've got six songs to describe, in a way, the rolling terrain ahead. You could reduce it to four tracks, depending on how long you want them to be riding for that time, depending on the length of your class. The tracks I've chosen, there are artists that are not well known for being British. They're well known in terms of indoor cycling circles, especially the likes of Faithless, Chicane, Above and Beyond. But they are either British or mainly British, maybe one or two Australian groups in there. But you could pretty much use any music, really. If you prefer using groups like The Clash, The Rolling Stones, The Beatles, much more famous, different style of music, different genre, that's fine. But to give it a British feel, it would be quite good as well. You could even go Wiggins's favorite type of music, which sort of mods the moped riding style of the 60s. And
That's Bradley Wiggins' favorite music.
he kind of is his haircut, his mutton chops, his
That's true.
he likes that kind of music. But yeah, the music I've chosen, it's being as most dance music is, it's around about the 70 RPM. So if someone were to mix it, they could actually, quicken some of the tracks to match it all together and make it just one seamless ride. But otherwise, just leave one track after the other. They're more or less similar. Some riders might find that, that one BPM extra makes them work a bit harder, but hey, that's, you could just say that the terrain, the surface of the road has changed a little bit and it's got a bit more drag in it. But otherwise, you could ride it as a flat road. If people are willing to go out of the beat, they just ride at the cadence that suits them, like it would happen in a real peloton. Some riders like to ride at a fast cadence, some prefer a high gear and a lower cadence. So I would just say find a cadence that suits you. You can use the beat as a, of the music as a guide if you want to. But the key thing is find that cadence, find that resistance, and that's your baseline effort that you can sustain all the way through. The ride is going to be, you can describe it in various ways. So we're going to have either the likes of Chris Froome, for example, general classification contender. He may be in the yellow jersey. Who knows? Because the one of the stages in Yorkshire is quite hilly, so he might be in that yellow jersey already. Maybe one of the breakaway riders will be. But because this is very much going to be a sprinter stage, it's very short. Breakaways have got next to no chance of getting away. There's no trip ups that where the breakaways could fool the peloton. It's pretty much going to come down to a sprint. And Mark Cavendish is starting to look very much on form. He's going to want revenge for not winning in the Olympics in London.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he's hungry. This is his land.
This is he's going to want to be seen. He's going to win it. He's going to want to win here almost as much as he wants to win on the Champs-Élysées.
Wow. Yeah, this is really important, especially when they have the home court advantage, if you will. Let's remind people that, we are doing this well in advance of the tour, so we don't so we're just guessing. Like, for example, you were explaining to me a couple days ago, Chris Froome crashed in the Dauphiné.
Yes, he
So
was leading the Dauphiné.
we're not even sure if it's going to be Wiggins or Froome in the tour as of this recording.
Yeah, he was leading the Dauphiné at the time, and he just took a bend a bit too widely. He crashed, hit his elbow quite hard. The out of respect, Contador and the rest of the peloton didn't push it, and on that day. But then, what would be yesterday, Contador attacked. And Chris Froome didn't seem to have as much zip about him. He seemed to have, it's not so much just the wound, it's actually the shock that the body has when you fall down.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
I've fallen down and had a concussion as well, and it takes a lot out of you.
And
So.
these guys crash hard. So, for an instructor, if you could even kind of create a story if you want. A lot of instructors are going to be teaching this before the stage actually happens. So they're going to be making up their own story.
So, yes, I mean, it's not Chris Froome in leading the Sky team. It'll probably be Bradley Wiggins stepping in to do it.
So we'll be finding that out shortly, hopefully in the next week or two. Well, we will, because the tour starts in 2 weeks. So that's one of the things. Now, again, instructors listening to this, if you happen to be teaching a stage like this after the actual stage happens, you can describe it exactly as it happened. Or you can do what Robert is suggesting here and just kind of keep it that modulating intensity endurance ride until we get to the finish. And now we are leading ourselves, or the riders are leading themselves into London. Then what happens? You've got a sprint set up for the finish.
It's going to be an optional sprint, but what's going to happen is effectively it's the pace of the peloton, just like it does in real life. The closer it gets to the line, the more it starts whipping up the intensity and the speed on the road faster and faster and faster, especially if there's any breakaways. If you decided to have any breakaways, you can start having them caught around about now, because the peloton won't want to be entering London with breakaways out in front. They will want to catch them before they get anywhere close to London. So any breakaways that are out there, you can just say, right, and the track I've described here, And I Will Kiss, which is from the Olympics, when that kicks in, you can just say, right, now the breakaways have been caught, there's nobody out there, it's now going to be set up for the sprint trains all to fight it out amongst each other. And of course, because each sprint train, so each sprinter will just say to each of their team, right, I want you to go out. They will start driving the pace harder and harder and harder and fight it out amongst each other to be the dominant train at the front. And because of that, each rider is just trying to go at maximum effort level, in order to try and keep that pace going.
And that sprinter is just tucked in the back until it gets down to those last two, right? He has a lead out rider, and don't they effectively just kind of slingshot the sprinter?
Yeah, I mean it's. As I've described it, it's kind of you want to start off. You've been a sort of zone two to zone three effort all the way through. That's kind of almost like just the preparation. It's just the setting for the stage finish, and then you start taking up zone three. You pick it up further and further. Zone four, you start getting just above threshold, and that's just to stay in the group. So whether you're a GC contender or whether you're one of the sprinters lining up. If the guys in front are going at maximum effort to try and drive that pace at over 30, 40 miles an hour, the riders behind in the slipstream, they may be working 10% less, but they're still over threshold. And that's even before they've been in the sprint. So it's going to be very, very hard work at the end for everyone. And then what you could do is, as I said, with the optional sprint, is you could either stay a kind of zone 5A to 5B right to the finish, and then that's it. You know, you're a GC contender. You're safe at the front. You've avoided all the dangers and crashes. You frequently see it, especially the yellow jersey, will always be around about 15th place. So they're away from the sprint, but they're away from the back of the group. If you want to be a sprinter, what you can start doing as well is, every time I've said pick up intensity, you can just say, right, you've got eight riders in front of you. And then after a minute, another one drops off. You've got seven, then six, then five, then four, and the pace is getting driven harder and harder and harder until it's your turn and you only go for about 15 to 20 seconds at maximum effort. So as the intensity is building, as each rider drops off, what they're doing is effectively they're almost sprinting at basically sprint level. So they're going at it for their best 1, 2, 3 minute effort. In our case, 1 minute. They're going to burn themselves out in a minute before the next rider kicks up, and they're going to burn themselves out in a minute, and then the next one, so on. So you could even, if you wanted to, prepare teams, split them into groups, and have lead out riders if they're willing to sacrifice themselves and burn themselves out, if you want to make it really, really complex. But otherwise, you can just imagine that you'd have to then pick up the intensity faster and faster and faster, and you're at pretty much the highest you can sustain for a very short period of time without burning out. So it is above threshold, you're in your red zone, you can't hold it for much longer, and then your final lead out rider is starting to burn out. He flicks the elbow, he tells you to go, you come out from behind him, and for the last 15 seconds, do whatever you've got left in the tank, and you just launch yourself to that line like your life depended on it. That's if you want to be a sprinter. If you want to be a GC rider, you just stay above threshold right to the finish line, because all you want to do is just finish safely, without minimal of fuss, without any crashes. So it just depends how what scenario you want to do. whether you stay kind of a zone 5A to 5B, basically above threshold, or you add an extra tiny little bit extra for those 15 seconds towards the end. And then when you cross that line, if it's Mark Cavendish, you can imagine the elation that he's going to have. He's probably going to go bonkers because he
Yeah, I
wanted
could
so
tell
badly to
everyone to put on a British jersey at that moment and throw their
win.
hands in the air and pretend they're British. That's awesome. And you know, the beauty of this is even if you have been, you've been riding in endurance tempo pace, which, as you and I try to tell everyone, is not necessarily easy, but it's not breathless. Look at, you've given them the opportunity at the end, and it's not just for that 15 seconds of the sprint. You've built them up harder and harder and harder and harder, and you've got 8 minutes of here. I see you use 8 minutes of that longer Underworld song. They're going to leave with that as their last memory. So that's what people tend to remember. So you've driven that nail in. They're definitely going to feel this.
And it's the same with the music. It's when I used to be a DJ, you have the steady flow of music that needs to keep coming and sort of ebb and flow all the way through. But the one thing I used to do as a DJ, and it's kind of almost drilled into us, is always, always finish on a high, leaving them wanting more. And
Just
that's
like
why,
fireworks,
yeah.
right? You've got the fireworks, and they're just kind of, they're fun, they're great to watch, and then boom, that crescendo finish. That's exactly what you've got here.
And it kind of goes back to also the discipline needed to make sure that when they go for that extra effort, they don't think that it's all over because they could be the first at the top of the hill. But if they have to stop and recover, the peloton's going to go straight flying past them. They're not going to hang around for them, not at those type of speeds. So they only need to go that little bit extra, that 10% more to take them out of their comfort zone, the zone three, even zone four. But the important thing is that they can recover from it while still working.
Well, our listeners have gotten some really good instructions here on how to engage your riders during an endurance tempo effort, and then obviously a big push at the finish. And if anyone has any questions, you can always email info at Indoor Cycling Association, and I'll forward them to Robert about how he teaches his very successful endurance classes.
And I'll be happy to answer them.
Well, thank you, Robert. This is great. I like how you finished here. You said now time for recovery and some fish and chips.
Ah, yes, which reminds me, it's dinner time. I'm hungry.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you.